Okay, so today is the 9th of February, and it's Bridget Brownlow interviewing Dr. George Nerbecki at St. Mary's. And so we'll begin by saying thank you, George, for coming today. If we could start by maybe you giving me your full name and your place of birth.
George Nerbecki, born in Montreal.
Born in Montreal, great. And if you could give a brief overview of your educational background.
Oh, St. Pat's, well, it still existed here in Halifax.
So you had moved to Halifax from Montreal?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, up to grade 8 in Montreal, the Catholic school, boys only until
yes.
we moved. Also some Jesuit teachers still in uniform, so
yes.
to speak. And then, of course, came to St. Pat's and skipped a grade, so I actually wound up here at St. Mary's. I think I was still 15, no more than 16.
You were 15 at St. Mary's? Oh my God.
I think, no more than 16 anyway. So,
wow.
Because I had been able to skip the grade.
Right.
And my father was, the reason we came to Halifax is that my father got a job here at St. Mary's.
Okay.
Teaching German.
Teaching German.
And
is your last name German?
No, it's Ukrainian.
It's Ukrainian,
yeah.
Okay. But your father was a language
yes.
Prof in German here.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And
okay.
So actually I knew the I have a very, very long history with the department because of course he used to come home and tell some story about some of the events.
You're truly following in his footsteps.
Yes, yes. And then, of course, yeah, he retired and I started, got a full-time job here. So, yeah.
So you went to St. Pat's and then came here to do your undergrad at St. Mary's?
Yes.
And then where did you go after that for your graduate work?
I did a master's at Dell and a PhD at Queen's.
And a PhD at Queen's,
yeah.
Okay. And all in. In languages?
No. I actually got a degree in political science, but I had done
here at St. Mary's.
Okay. But I had done several French courses, and after working at some manual jobs for a couple of years, my father suggested that maybe I should upgrade my French and perhaps be able to get a job with the government.
Right.
I think he had the Foreign Service in mind in particular. I don't know what that means exactly. And I said, okay, sold my car and went back for a year of upgrading.
Okay.
I would have been, I guess, by then probably about 24, I think.
Okay. And here at St. Mary's.
Here at St. Mary's.
Okay.
And I actually had as a prof in his first year here, Paul Bernard, who
did you
is
really?
Still teaching at, in our department. He'll be retiring, I think, in a couple of years, who became a friend of mine.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Okay, so can you, what year was it, your first year when you were 15 or 16, what year did you start at St. Mary's?
I'm thinking 69 or 70.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and
so around
look.
That time.
Yeah, it's just about the turn of the decade.
And so, let's start with what are your memories about the campus in 1969-70?
Much smaller. Everybody smoked, of course.
Yes.
Far fewer female students. Far fewer.
Would you have even noticed their presence? I'm interested in that in particular. When you first arrived, women had already been here, but for a very short period of time. Did you notice them around? Or did it still, what did it feel like at the time?
Oh, no, no, you noticed. Believe me, you noticed. It's just when I think back, you know, and I see my classes now,
right.
Especially in French, where female representation is typically significantly higher
yes.
than male.
Right.
About some of the courses I was in, you know, out of say 20 students, you'd have maybe three females.
Right.
And I'm just guessing.
Yes.
But you know, it's been a while.
Yeah.
But far fewer. Well, and the campus was smaller, and the first year that I was here, I'm pretty sure Father LaBelle was still.
Yes, he would have still been president. That would have been his last year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So were there, do you recall sort of Jesuits running around and?
I certainly do. I recall stumbling. at that point in the South Wing, McNally.
Yes.
There was a wing reserved for the Jesuits.
That's right.
And
yeah.
They were still living there, and I kind of stumbled in and looked around and thought, uh-oh. Stumbled right out again.
That's interesting. You're the second person who described that yesterday in an interview. Someone else described, you didn't really know what went on in that South Wing. But
yes.
You knew you weren't allowed in there.
Yeah.
And the occasional drunk Jesuit would stumble out, is what the other oral history interview elicited. Yeah. So interesting.
That,
okay.
That I didn't know. I guess it shouldn't surprise anybody. Sure, and it was the late 60s, so you had all that, you know, upheaval with mm-hmm. hippies and long hair. And
what were you like back then?
I grew my hair long.
Yes.
I worked for the Journal, which was a bit of a hotbed of, I don't know if you'd call it radical thought, but it was quite left.
Oh, it was fabulous. I mean, I've
left.
Pored over the journals.
Have you?
From all those years.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
did you see the one that was censored after the, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around then. So, with the War Measures Act.
Yes.
Right. So. Majority, I guess the editorial staff would have been possibly even leaning a little bit to supporting the separatists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really recall so much. So, yeah, but they were very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
They were intellectual type kids, the editor and
mm-hmm.
the assistant editor. And so on. They were all not necessarily very good students, but very intelligent.
The quality of the writing, in my opinion, George, is far superior during the years you would have been associated with the Journal than what I've read,
mm-hmm.
say in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
so,
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, just really high quality writing, interesting stories, more more reflective of how active the student body would have been
yes.
at that time.
Yes.
You know, really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually leading me to another question around part of what I'm looking at is the secularization of the university and how big a deal was that? Did people notice? Was it? So this would have been right at your time as well. The university became, not associated directly anymore with the Catholic Church. So the that happened in 1970. In the journals during that time, there, save for maybe one or two articles, there's virtually nothing written about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you have any memories around that as an issue.
I don't remember it as being an issue.
Right.
It just happened.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And that was that. And I guess the students probably just took it as being a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody was surprised.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The times they were a-changing,
<That's right. laughs>
you know. So no, you're. I think you're right on with that observation that it wasn't a significant
mm-hmm.
issue. Yeah.
Some people in their oral histories have pointed out that they would have been aware that the Board of Governors, however, although the university became secular, the Board of Governors still would have been very committed in various ways to upholding Catholic morals and teachings, and so there would have been conflict, although the university itself was changing, and there still would have been conflict. For example, condom machines in the residences, and people on the board would have been very upset about things, developments like that. What might or might not have been taught in the classroom would have been concerning
mm-hmm.
from a Catholic perspective from the Board
yes.
of Governors. Does that surprise you to hear that, or?
Especially insofar as I think those were days where there was sort of a polarization, right?
Yeah.
Young people were doing their thing and growing their hair long, and drugs were coming on the scene, and the idea of free love, and, you know, let's get rid of these taboos. I think it may have been at that time that the pill came
Yes,
out
that's
too,
right.
as
Yep,
well,
absolutely.
right? And then, of course, there was always a backlash, you know,
Mm-hmm.
from the older generation saying, you know, you should get your hair cut. What are things coming? Well, even the music reflects it,
That's right.
right?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, so there was, and there was Woodstock and all those kinds of things. So I'm not surprised. I didn't actually experience much of that firsthand, and probably because I didn't participate in too many university events. I would just go. The Journal was a hangout place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we'd all
okay.
hang out there.
Yeah.
You know, have some parties
mm-hmm.
and so on. not during the day. We didn't. You know, it was.
Had to work hard to put out those quality newspapers.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I remember interviewing, who was the interim president who eventually became mayor of Halifax?
Edmund Morris.
Edmund Morris.
Yes.
I remember
He was the first lay. Yeah.
Yeah, he was. And I remember interviewing him.
Do you remember what about?
Oh, just in general. I wasn't.
I think I've read that article. I'll dig that up for you.
Is that right?
That's coming back
I,
to mind.
I
yeah.
only I didn't do too many. I only did them when I think I was asked, because I preferred the photography part.
Yes.
But I do remember interviewing him. I think I was present at an interview when we interviewed the new president.
Yes.
Kerrigan. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my picture of him is actually in the yearbook, in one of the
yearbooks.
Yes. Black and white. Yeah. Of course, there was no digital photography, and we had this beautiful dark room.
Upstairs?
Yeah, on the fifth
really?
Floor. Yeah, with
wow.
mice and everything.
No.
Right. They were everywhere. Actually, I fed them. I remember seeing this cute little mouse running around and leaving a cookie for it, you know, thinking, hey, it's not hurting anybody.
That's right.
But it was, it had some sophisticated equipment.
Great.
No, it was
so what, when you look back at that experience and being involved with the Journal and whatnot, how do you think about that? And was a meaningful part of your university time?
Yeah, very much
yeah.
so.
Okay.
Very much so, yeah. I was a little bit reluctant. I was more conservative. So I went along to a large extent. These were my friends.
Yes.
I didn't say much, but I was at times less than comfortable with some of the opinions that they were putting out.
Mm-hmm.
Can
you think of an example?
Well, I think the FLQ crisis
yes.
Would have been one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that I thought it appropriate, given the circumstances, you know, that they should do, you know, put that on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
It was made clear that people were really worried about that. There had been an article written at one time which caused a bit of a furor, which was administration as pig. I don't know if you came across that. But it was.
Sounds. I think I have. I'm going to go back and look now.
You know, the Journal certainly didn't spare. Was not shy about criticizing, you know, admin or whatever, you know. So.
In fact, around that, you would be interested to know this. Someone told me that Henry LaBelle would have suffered a lot of criticism. Vis-a-vis the Journal, and
yes.
and apparently ended up being quite devastating to him, that he really struggled with how to handle that. And
mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that rings a bell. Now, I would have been, again, young and sort of arriving on the scene, and probably would have just
He was on his way out when you were on
He
your
was
way
on
in.
His way
Yeah.
out. I was on my way in, and you know, our paths crossed, but I do recall some unpleasantness there. And
right.
Yeah, some
very
scathing
diplomatic.
scathing criticism.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose another participant in the oral histories has pointed out to me that, you know, that was the, it was very difficult from the Jesuits' perspective to be mindful of that, that not only was there this student protest culture, but that, you know, they had been so accustomed to good orderly direction in terms of, you know, so it was extra rebellious, if you may, in their vision of, you know, how students should be interacting and behaving.
Oh,
and
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that, absolutely. Yeah, how it would be, somewhat shocking, you know, the social developments, you know, by extension, what was happening on a campus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any recollections of interactions with Mount St. Vincent, or sort of what?
No. I remember a big event used to be dances at King's. And I don't remember, they certainly wouldn't have been a weekly affair, probably held once a month or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they would have been held in the gym.
Okay.
Which was packed. And that would have been known, you know, by the different campuses. So seminary students would have gone there as well. I did.
Mm-hmm.
But.
What were those dances like?
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, and I don't recall people worrying about, you know, people drank and all the rest of it, but I don't recall ever having to worry about violence or fights
right,
or
okay.
anything like that. You know, it's don't remember anything like that.
Would you have had live bands and things like
yes.
that? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the overwhelming, you know, recollections from people around all these years is a lot of fun.
A lot,
yeah.
That's absolutely
what an exciting
right.
time. I mean,
exciting
even from
time. It was carefree.
Yeah. No AIDS. No.
No.
You know, this. Yeah.
No, there was there wasn't very much. Also, there wasn't the anxiety about marks. And, you know, if you failed, well, which I did. You know, I failed. But three courses in the first year.
You were so young.
Because I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, plus I had gone into, for some reason, gone into science, thinking, yeah, that sounds interesting. That's maybe where the jobs are. And I wasn't very good at that. You know,
look at you now,
yeah,
PhD.
Yeah. But it was. I certainly don't get the impression that. Younger generation now is having nearly as good a time
right.
as we did. I mean, it was carefree.
Yeah. I agree.
There were jobs.
That's right.
You know, there were make-work projects left, right, and center. And as a matter of fact, when I graduated, I went straight into one. And it was common knowledge that you weren't going to do a heck of a lot. And it was going to be an 8-week project so you could go on unemployment.
Right.
And it was organized and sponsored by the government.
Yes.
By, supply and services.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, it was, nobody seemed in particular to be worrying about too much.
The types
you know,
of pressures like
besides
that.
Besides the usual, you know, heartbreak. And,
yeah, right.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But no, everybody seemed to be having a really good time.
Yeah.
Very carefree.
Lovely,
yeah.
You know, really, to be able to have those memories and that experience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
And even, you know, even when I came back a few years later, things still seemed to be pretty laid back.
Anything specific that you can recall about when you returned when you were 24?
Yes. I was actually, I started working before I didn't need to, you know, I somehow or other stumbled through it. I guess I had, you know, enough smarts to be able to pass without doing much work. So then I started working and wound up in upper level French courses. My impression was, I think, that the students had matured,
mm-hmm.
some.
And you had matured.
And I had matured as
yes.
well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem quite as wild to you? I mean, it was still carefree,
no.
but not as wild.
Right. And of course, I by that time, I was associating with the older students who would have all been, you know, in their 20s.
Right.
And
so this would have been 74, 75, around there.
I'm thinking 75.
Yeah.
75, 76,
Okay. Anything else that you can remember that stands out for you in either time of your time at St. Mary's?
Just anecdotes?
Anecdotes, yeah. Any anecdotes, any...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember in philosophy class... falling asleep, and the bell would ring in those days.
Okay.
It was a big classroom in McNally, and at the change of classes, the bell would go off, just like in high school.
Right.
I remember falling asleep, and of course, you know how that goes. You pretend that you're not. By putting your hand over your forehead and pretending to be reading, really absorbed in the book, meanwhile they're dropping off. We had done a fair bit of partying in those days, and it was deathly boring. It was philosophy class. I just heard, as I was dropping off, "What can you tell me about Hegel's philosophy or whatever?" Pause, and obviously he saw me keeling over. He said, "George." So I snapped to, and I just heard that, and I said, "What would you like to know?" And he laughed. The bell rang, and I remember him saying, "Saved by the bell."
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Totally saved by the bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't too much. Of course, we were all skipping a lot of classes.
Right, yes.
All of us were.
Yes.
You know, sometimes we'd go, sometimes we wouldn't. I was in an interesting position because I knew some of the profs through my father.
Right, of course.
But I didn't
seem to
care.
Was that more pressure for you?
You didn't have pressure, really, then. Honestly, you
didn't.
Did
you live at home?
I don't. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I lived at home. I paid half tuition, and regular tuition at the time was about $700 and some odd.
Right.
So I would have been paying $300 some odd. Well, I didn't. My father
yes.
coughed it up.
Yeah.
But I mean, the stuff will probably eventually come back to me, and I'll share it with you.
That would be great.
It.
No, this is wonderful. You've given me a wonderful insight, and your time with the journal and all of this is very relevant. So as I move forward and, you know, be looking again at all of the written documentation vis-a-vis the journals and things, I might come back to you and ask about some specific things.
Sure. If something does, you know, come back, which it will, I'll
certainly
jot it down, and then, you know, we can meet again.
That's fabulous. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's absolutely wonderful.